All right. We'll have a minute of silence. A minute of silence with trombone solo. I don't know if that's audible. Whatever. Okay, go ahead. Wait, yes, you go ahead. I was going to... Was it me I was going to save it? No, sorry. Drunk.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Jazzy Dragon. I'm Ian Boothby.
And I'm confused now. Jazzy Dragon? I'm David Dedrick?
Yeah, that's right. You're the Fresh Prince of Dragonair. I mentioned the jazz thing because we have, it sounds like a New Orleans-style jazz band, outside of our window here at Hell Kitty Studios today. I assume it's some sort of a trick funeral, yes. Like in a James Bond movie, where someone's going to get killed, and then they'll be put into a coffin and then carried away while the jazz music plays.
Yeah. When we were outside, we could hear the full band, but now that we're indoors, we can only hear the trombone.
And if you can't hear any of this, just imagine jazz playing in your head.
Just imagine a trombone playing a song, unrecognizable. That's the first thing. There's no recognizable song.
Dave, it's about the notes they don't play.
It's about the notes they don't play.
By the way, you know, whenever they say
hey guys,
that...
guys, don't play those notes.
Yeah, whenever they say that in jazz, it's like, it's the notes they don't play.
Yeah.
To be fair, I'm also not playing those notes.
True.
Where's my jazz parade?
I don't think there's a jazz parade.
Okay. And here's the thing. Like, I haven't really planned my funeral out. And again, I don't want to die in the near future, or probably for a very, very long time. But... If I have a funeral, I do not want a jazz funeral.
You don't want a jazz funeral?
No, let's not.
That's the one thing that you're... So you don't like jazz music at all?
No, there's two things I don't want. One, I don't want a jazz funeral.
Okay.
Two, I don't want a Klingon funeral. Also, I don't want people answering their cell phones in the middle of my funeral. Dave just got something on his phone. Yeah. What was it?
There was a customer calling about his horse.
About his horse?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what? Maybe I'm going to take this. Sorry.
All right.
We're just going to pause for a second. Just because I've not been avoiding the person, but I've been missing his calls, so
all right.
I should just give him a call back. Sorry. Sorry, everybody. Oh, hi, Doug. This is David calling you back. Sorry. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not at home, but... sorry. I've been super busy the last little while, so I haven't been able to return your call, because I knew I couldn't even go there, so there's no point. But, Yeah, what were you, okay. Yeah, we can do it tomorrow. Yep, that'd be fine. Okay, we'll see you later then. Okay, bye. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
He's called me a couple times, and then I was like, naturally, I don't want to talk to him during the show, and then I was like, oh, he's already called me twice, so I really better answer, because bad person.
And that was Dave with Horse Sense.
Dave with how to avoid horse customers.
Yeah. Well, Dave's got a program. They'll show you how to make money with horses.
Yes.
And
Here's how you make $1 million with horses. You ready for this? Ready? Everybody? Mm-hmm. Everyone's ready for this? Start with $2 million. Classic joke. The other one was my in-laws had a book, and I believe it belonged to my wife's gramps, as he was called,
okay.
Her great-grandfather. And it was called How to Make Money with Horses. And you open the book, and inside was a tiny shovel and a tiny, like a dustpan or whatever. So you can shovel the poo into the dustpan, and that's how you make money with horses.
Sure thing.
There you go.
Also good.
Yeah, not bad. Not a bad joke. Not a bad gag. But, you know, when you think about it, how many of those sold? Maybe at the time there was more people involved with horses, but it seems like a very obscure, very particular audience sort of a
though
sort
the
of
nice
gag
thing
gift.
Is, if, say, the books didn't sell, you could burn them and then scoop them up with a little dustpan.
That's true.
They come with their own book-burning dustpan.
You could you just print new covers with a different joke.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, it's all good stuff. Anyway, that was the explanation for why we have a jazz band playing. That was David's explanation for why he just talked to somebody on the phone
in the middle
of our show.
I'm sorry about that, everybody.
But that's okay. That's fine. Listen, anyone here needs to answer the phone in the middle of our show. You do so. In fact, many of you are on your phone right now and would not have an option. So it all does make sense. Now, David, last time we saw each other was not last week here at the show.
Was last 2 hours ago at the other show?
At the Totally Tintin show?
Yeah.
Are we doing a plug for that?
Sure.
Hi, everybody. We got a show called Totally Tintin. We do Tintin.
It's really great.
Sure. Yeah, one out of two of us. I think it's super great, but Dave apparently only thinks it's great. Weird. We went to something we were plugging for forever, which was VanCaf, Vancouver Comics Arts Festival.
I wish I'd remembered about it.
So
wish I'd remembered to come.
Right. So instead, I had to do a life-size drawing of Dave, put him there, and everyone went, "We love him. We love this guy."
That's right. Because you had my hands out in like a high five.
Yeah.
So all day long, people were just like slapping.
Yeah, that's right. Especially Nazis who'd come by and went like, "Oh man, that guy's really on board with us." That's right. And so what I did was I took an MP3 player and I just replayed the things Dave most commonly said.
Okay, what such as?
Here's a classic joke.
Okay.
And then that would be it. Okay, that'd be it. Okay. Real Dave-isms. Things like, "I'm sorry, I got to take this call right now." And I'm so tired.
That is not normal.
I'm so tired. Okay. There's that one.
That's yours, but anyway.
And are you going to finish that candy?
Okay, that's true. That's me.
Yeah. So anyway, it just put those on rotation and it all worked out good.
Are you gonna finish that hard candy?
Yeah.
That's the common question I ask people.
Are you going to finish that movie, Hard Candy? Because I don't think I want to watch the ending of that. It looks very depressing.
I haven't watched it.
With Ellen Page.
I liked her in Juno.
Sure, everyone did. And then she became Sprite in the X-Men.
Did she?
Well, she became Kitty Pryde.
Okay.
Kitty Pryde went by many names in the X-Men.
That's true.
Shadowcat.
Sprite. I loved her as Folio Girl.
Ariel. What?
Yeah. Did you like that character?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
I don't get the reference.
There's no reference. It is like the combination of Folio and
okay.
Because I had
my cutout was next to Dave at the at the con, and mine just went, "I don't get the reference." And my other thing I say is I'd like to apologize for what Dave just said.
Yeah.
And we just put that on a rotation, man. And it all worked out.
It worked out well.
But those of you that came by, special thanks.
Yeah.
Those of you that came by and went, "Where's my damn shirt?" It's in the mail. Sorry about that. But many of you came by. You got free buttons.
Yep.
Everyone enjoyed the buttons. We ran out of the Tintin buttons away.
The first day they were gone.
Yeah, they went out the door. And then the Sneaky Dragon, the tiny Sneaky Dragon buttons, people really liked those as well.
They're very stylish.
People had a good laugh at the siren buttons that you
those
made.
Those were also crazily popular.
Yeah. Yeah, very nice. We had a whole bunch of buttons. By the way, if you order anything from the Sneaky Dragon store at sneakydragon.com, which is no longer the Jerk store.
Yeah, I changed it.
Yeah, because
we had a bad experience at the show.
Well,
over and over again.
It's tough to tell people to go to the Jerk store because it really feels like you're just
I think we have something for you at the Jerk store.
Yeah. Yeah, no dice on that. So we've changed it back. Mm-hmm. But if you buy anything from the Jerk store, you will get a whole bunch of buttons.
Yeah.
Let's just throw that out there now. Sure. But those of you that came by, it was great to meet you.
Yeah.
Thank you for telling us, you know, things like where you listen to the show, why you listen to the show.
Where you live.
Yeah.
The contents of your house.
Your mother's maiden name.
When you're going on vacation.
The last three numbers on your credit card. All things you really, we're very trustworthy people, but still you should not do that.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
I did appreciate the people who wrote it out for us, though, because then it was easy to remember.
Yes.
Thank you.
Now, what did you think of the con in general?
Oh, it's great. Great.
Why? Elaborate.
Do I have to elaborate?
Well, you've been to... Well, okay, listen.
Okay, I've been to many. I've been to many of these, yes.
You've been to like an Emerald City Con? You've been to a... Mm-hmm. And so here's what I'm saying. When Dave talks about what other cons are like, he's been to many, so he's not specifically slamming any one of them.
I'm not...
You've been to a Vancouver Fan Expo. You've been to many of those kind of things. You've been to an Alternative Press Expo.
I have.
In the Americas.
That was a long time ago.
It was, but you were there.
I'm sure it got bigger after I was no longer part of it.
Sure, okay. But what makes this one a good one?
Because didn't that one feel kind of like in a big empty room with us and three other tables?
No, there was people. There was your Los Brothers Hernandezes and your Daniel Clowses.
Was he there?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Well, I went one year.
You went without me. I don't think that they were not there the first year. I think they came back.
Your Dave Simses.
Jason was there.
Yep.
That's true. But he was very much on that bandwagon.
By the way, there's
bandwagon.
A siren went by, and as our button says, take a drink whenever you hear a siren.
When you hear a siren, take
a
drink.
Yeah. But back to the con we were at.
Well, what I like about it, I mean, for me, what's up my particular alley, if that's an expression you can use without pictures, is it's all independent comics. So there's very little there that's, industry comics, so which, you know, I'm not really into superhero comics and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. This is more my people, you know, so I really like the personal element of it, the handcrafted element. Mm-hmm. And it's just great. And it's great because it's free, you know, so you get people in who aren't comic book fans, who are just people off the street, maybe, you know, stopped at Japa Dog for a hot dog, thought, well, while I'm here, I might as well walk through these doors And then they went into this place and they couldn't believe what they were looking at. And that's really exciting, I think.
Yeah, it's really beautiful visuals.
Yeah.
Everyone's very passionate about the work they're doing and such a wide variety of stuff. And it is nice seeing, I mean, this to me is always my problem with a lot of art, which is the gatekeepers who are in the way.
Yeah.
And so you got the general public, gatekeepers, and you.
Yeah.
And then in this kind of situation, just people are coming in
yeah.
and they're walking by. Oh, what's that? That's a drawing of the thing I like. Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. What's this? I just made a mini comic. How much is it? $2. I'll buy that. Sounds good. Done. Boom.
Yeah.
And there's no in between. It's fantastic.
Yeah, we sold a Tauntaun, you know, one of the title, the Tauntaun title card. The
Tintin as a Tauntaun.
Yeah, that's right. We sold it to this little old Chinese lady, who obviously I don't think is a listener to the show.
Right.
I don't want to offend you if you are a little old Chinese lady, but I don't think you are. I think you just happened to be walking by, saw that t-shirt, thought, that is right up someone I know's alley.
That looks cute.
And I'm going to buy it.
They don't know what it is.
Yeah, and she bought it, and I disappointed her by not having a bag for it. But so next time, I'm going to bring my wife's collection of Safeway bags.
That's a good idea. Well, you know, I mentioned on another one of our shows because I did a panel with Lucy Bellwood, who's a cartoonist.
Lucy Bellwood?
Yeah.
I've heard of her.
And she did a series of mini comics about tall ships and working on tall ships.
Yeah.
Now, where are you going to get that? Where's that sit in your bookstore? Where? I mean, they're autobiographical stories. Mm-hmm. Oh, then they go in biography. No, wait, they're about tall ships. Well, then they're in ships over here. But they're cartoons. Then we're going to put them over here with Garfield. No, wait. They're also somewhat mature.
They're cartoons. We're going to put them in over here behind this door that you can't see what's behind. No. Actually, the graphic novels are pretty well displayed at
chapters, but the comics sheeted were mini comics.
Mm-hmm, yeah, that's,
so, you know, there's not enough profit margin on those kind of things to sell in shops or comic shops for the most part. So, you know, it's one of the only places you'll find it. But if you like tall ships and want to learn about how to tie knots and how a ship works and... Or she does a comics about camping. Mm-hmm. Great. And I think she also does some adult stuff as well.
Yeah. And friend of the show, Nina Matsumoto was there.
Yeah.
Friend of the show, Kathleen Gross was there.
Yeah. Not a friend of the show yet, James Lloyd was there.
Not a friend of the enemy of the show, James Lloyd was there. Our friend with David Fine has been on the show. His daughter Lily was there at the show. And, you know, everyone learns a little bit each year that they come there too. And so, like, next year... I think we might get it right next year, finally.
Yeah. We did not have our shirts on display in a way that made sense.
We did on Sunday.
A little bit.
Because Millis came on Sunday and put them out in a way that was like...
But I think the problem was we had a wall behind us and we did not utilize the wall
That's
well.
True.
There's a couple of the people who were there, someone like an Erica Moan, who does a webcomic called Oh Joy Sex Toy.
Yeah.
She was on a reality show called, I believe, Strip Search that the Penny Arcade fellas did.
Yeah.
And I actually like that show, even though I don't like that kind of elimination
reality
show. Yeah,
I tried to watch
show.
It. I tried to watch it, but I couldn't get past that.
Then don't watch those bits. Just watch the middle bits. And when it comes to the elimination, get rid of it. Don't forget about it. But one of the things they did on the show that made a lot of sense was they showed how to display things at a con.
Oh.
So it's like how to, where you place your comics and where do you place your prices? And if you've got a wall behind you, where do you put stuff though? People's eyes will be drawn here.
Why didn't we watch that before we did the show?
We're lazy is why. but that was
lazy.
That was one of the
busy.
Tasks they did. They did, and so three of the people from that show were there, and you saw their tables and went, "This is well marketed stuff." Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It really is interesting. You know, you're right. You never stop learning for those kind of things, and it's so basic. You think like it's so basic. You think, what is there to learn? Put your stuff on a table. People look at it. They'll buy it. No, where you display stuff does matter.
I guess.
And what you say, you don't want to be too pushy. You don't want to be too passive. You don't want to be. You don't want to be on your phone looking. Like you're don't care, but you don't want to be. Hey, buddy.
But we never
hey, buddy,
did that.
Hey, buddy.
We
hey, buddy. Never... Hey, you like comics, buddy? You don't want to be that guy.
I think we had a pretty good. I think we had a pretty good pitch.
Yeah,
what I'm saying.
Which is, Dave will punch you if you don't come.
That's right. Get over here. Hello. Hey.
Hey, knucklehead.
Where are you going?
Hey, Mr. Bad Pants. Hey, stupid shirt.
That's right.
Come here, dumb haircut. Hey, Mr. Glasses. Think you're so big. That guy. We did a lot of that.
Yeah, that's
right. We were the insult.
We were the Don Rickles of the
without the skill.
Without the skills.
Hey, hockey puck.
You kept saying hockey stick. That was your problem.
Yeah, right? My problem was I was throwing hockey pucks at people when I said that. And they were like, I wish I had a hockey stick and just whack this back at you. No, we had a pretty good pitch, which was, would you like a free button?
That's good.
That's a good thing. That's oh, good sure, thing. I would like a button. And then the buttons were funny. Once you're there, you go, the buttons are for the podcast.
Yeah.
David does a title card every week. They don't know what title card means. I lose them a little bit with that.
Yeah.
And here, what's the show about? Well, it's these images on the shirt are what we've talked about on past shows. So you can see it's a wide variety of things.
Yeah.
Because our show, to describe, is confusing.
Is it?
Yeah, you can say stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
But like, hey, what does Dave, that mean? Dave, want to go see a movie downtown? What's it about? It's a stream of consciousness. Boo. Don't want to see it. I want to listen to my new album. What is it? It's a stream of consciousness. Boo. I don't want to hear it.
You're so, right. So you're on. Right. It doesn't work. It doesn't work in anything because I thought, I was thinking about it. And I was like, oh, our podcast is about everything. But like you said, that doesn't sell either. It's a real ugh. Yeah, it's hard because we don't really have any particular theme to our show. We start talking at the beginning and then we finish at some point.
Right.
Where here's, we feel like it.
Here's what I say to people now. You pretend to be a person who's asking me what our show's about and I'll
okay.
tell you what I do.
Okay. What is our show about?
Lottery tips.
Good. That's a good one.
Yeah.
What is your show about though?
What's my show about?
Yeah.
Every episode I predict a way that I might die.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are you going to do that or is that kind of scary?
Oh, it's very scary.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it if I were you.
Eagle attack.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
actually
kind
of scary because we do have a number of eagles in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
And if they decided to attack, I don't know what I'd do.
Mm. Cower?
Like, well, it's not even cower. I think like if it came down with his talons and went right for my throat, mm-hmm. I'm done.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do about that. Or if he got the right place on my leg, he got an artery,
yeah.
I'm done. Like an eagle is bigger than you assume.
Yeah. Well, quit walking around like a mole.
Okay.
That'll solve everything.
Sure.
It's an easy one. I think mine would be a gumball accident.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I just came from a really good show at the Museum of Vancouver where it starts actually with you having to pick a certain gumball.
Oh.
So maybe you don't want to go there.
I shouldn't go there for the next little while.
That's right. Sorry, Cassandra. I don't want to predict the way you might die, but that you mentioned this gumball situation. It's perhaps. It's actually, possible. One of the nice things about the show is it does start off with, I'll say it's about happiness, this show.
Yeah.
And so they have gumballs. And tubes from 1 to 10, and you pick a gumball depending on your level of happiness at the moment.
Yeah.
And then you get a gumball. Yeah. And so people put the gumball in their mouth, and you go through the thing. And it's nice because you're not going to mess around all day there because your gumball loses flavor, and I don't think there's any garbage cans. So you're like, I got to go now.
Fortunately, there's an unlimited supply of bedposts.
Sure.
That would be a good ending for like a Twilight Zone or a comic like Haunted Fear or whatever. It would be a person stuck in one of those vending machines inside those little plastic globes.
Yeah,
that would be good.
Creepy.
I don't know how to get there, but I'm just saying that would be a good ending.
It's a person. Okay, so you need someone to put a quarter in.
But it has to be against them, or it has to be something that there has to be some sort of justice to that ending.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you're doing it like a Haunt of Fear or Crypt of Terror or whatever.
Well, you'd be like someone who would never give someone a quarter.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's all these people then they were waiting out there and just like, please let me out of here. It's like, I would, but I don't have a quarter because you never gave one to me.
It could be like a dad who's terrible to his child or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And his kid always wants, you know, one of those things in a machine. And then somehow it ends up, you know, the dad ends up in there and the boy can see him.
So when was the first one of these? Because that's like, we know that from like EC Comics, mm-hmm. the Twisteroo, Twilight Zone. Who was the first ones to start doing that kind of thing?
The twist ending?
Yeah, well, not the twist ending, but the ironic ending based on, you know, listen, I hate pancakes. No one can have pancakes. And you end up as a pancake. Well, maybe that's a bad one. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like the...
it's a very bad
any
one.
Any of the Twilight Zones where,
yeah.
you know, the big flip at the end happens. Yeah. Like what, was there a series of novels that was like O. Henry type stories?
I'm thinking, well, O. Henry would be an example of that. But even O. Henry didn't always do that kind of twist ending, but Feldstein and Gaines, I know that when they were writing those stories
for EC Comics,
EC Comics
for Mad Magazine, mm-hmm.
I know that they would, there was some sort of book by Bennett Cerf or Surf or something like that
Surf
that they used
Bennett Surf,
and his book was like full of those sort of ironic, they're like little story, like little short kind of one paragraph stories. Right. And they ended with these little twist endings all the time.
Oh, neat.
And they mined those for material for EC Comics.
Yeah. The more direct way, of course, is your German fairy tales, which is, you know, don't put your finger up your nose. Don't put your finger up your nose. Oh, there was a mouse up your nose and it ate your finger when you put your finger up your nose. There. Yeah. So it's divine, horrible retribution for minor actions.
Yes. Yeah. And they were very liberal in how they borrowed stuff, because they completely ripped off a Ray Bradbury story.
Oh, is that right?
One time, yeah. And when he called them out on it, they credited him with it. And then they actually arranged with him to use more of his stories and had a bunch of like Ray Bradbury science fiction stories.
That okay. Used. That's the way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. But, they were, because I mean, it's, you know, it's an endless, you know, mouth they're throwing stuff into. Yeah. So
but then ironically, eventually... it was a different Ray Bradbury and they paid the wrong Ray Bradbury. Twist.
Twist ending.
Twist.
I'm actually not a huge EC Comics fan, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I like Harvey Kurtzman. I like his stuff.
Yeah.
And one thing I like about them is that he did not overdo the descriptions of what's happening. Like, I find that the ones that were written by... I wish I could remember his first name, but I can't remember his last name. Feldstein. I find the ones that...
Al.
Al Feldstein, that's right. Thanks. That he wrote, I always find them too wordy. Like, this is so much... words and a lot of it is describing what you can see in the panel. Mm-hmm. And I just don't like that. To me, that's anti-comics. If you're describing with words what's visible in the picture, that's not using the comic form the way it should be used, you know, right. Which is economy of words, you know, lots of pictures. That's what it should be. And I just find that it's just annoying with that, you know. But Kurtzman didn't fall into that. Also, Kurtzman used actual human letterer. He didn't use that Leroy style, that kind of drafting style.
That put me off.
Yeah, it's very off-putting.
It was annoying lettering and then way too much of it.
Way too much of it. And there was a very good artist named Johnny Craig who wrote his own stories. He basically, I think he did Crypt of Terror. I may be wrong. He may have did Hot into Fear. But one of the comics was basically for Johnny Craig. Every issue had a Johnny Craig story in it, and he wrote his own stories. Mm-hmm. And he drew in a kind of a Milt Caniff style, very chiaroscuro with, you know, just, but he had a beautiful, beautiful style. And every issue of Haunt of Fear, whichever one he did, always had a Johnny Craig cover. And his covers are just fantastic covers, like so good. Some classic ones like the guy going to kiss the girl and seeing the woman coming out of the well behind her.
Yeah.
That's a classic. Or the hand coming out of the road as a car is driving towards it. There's a lot of classic images that you just go, oh, that's, wow. He did a lot of those. He was very good artist. But he was slow. Someone like Jack Davis, he could fill like 13 different titles with a story in each one because he could whip them out. You know, those big floppy feet he drew. He could just like quickly, you know, just scratch all that stuff out really fast. Whereas Craig was a very deliberate, slow artist. So he was like a once a month guy. Whereas Jack Davis, you know, he could be in Two-Fisted Tales, he could be in Frontline Combat, he could be in Haunt of Fear, he could be in
and still do amazing
science fiction
work.
Ones. Yeah. And yeah, because he did like that the classically horrible baseball story where it ends up with someone's internal organs make up the bases and stuff like that. It's very famous for how horrible it is, like how graphic and crazy it was. Yeah, yeah. It's terrible. But he drew that one. And you know,
do you remember what the guy's sin was?
I don't remember, Eric. I don't even know if I've read that one. I just know of it as a classic, you know, story of sort of over the top that Wortham brought up as an example of why
I did
these...
not care for those kind of things as a kid. I did not like the horror comics.
Why would you? I didn't mind them.
I think also because like I used to see a lot of the Warren stuff too, and that just was so over the top for me. It was just like, oh, shut up, stop trying to. It's just so gross.
I didn't actually see
that. I wasn't
that
kind of kid.
I didn't see any of that kind of stuff because, I just wasn't in my field of vision.
I wasn't a gross out kid. I wasn't up for your garbage pail.
Where would you see those
kids? Warren stuff. I'd go to a smoke shop to buy my
okay.
comics.
Oh, okay.
And so they'd have the Warren stuff. You have your Vampirella and the creepy, next to crazy.
They did a great reprint of The Spirit though, Warren Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Just fantastic, like. And I mean,
but it was confusing to me. The Spirit was a confusing comic to me. Like I didn't understand it.
I loved it.
Because it was, is it a superhero comic or not?
Yeah.
What is it? And then there'd be weird stories and a very different style, you know, from the past. And then, it would mess me up.
It depended on where you, like the Warren one, because they weren't.
Then they're on the moon. What?
They weren't.
What's going on?
They weren't done chronologically.
Yeah, that's a problem.
They picked them from the prime era. So you're getting like the best of the best in the Warren ones, which is nice. Because then the series went to a certain number of Warren ones, and then they stopped. And then Kitchen Sink took up a bunch to do the rest of them, I guess. And then they carried it on to like issue 40 or whatever. And so there is the pickings get slimmer, because if you really like that really prime era of of Eisner when he was really cooking on all cylinders, and you know, he had a super team around him. People like Pfeiffer was writing for him, and the Moon one was Wally Wood did a lot of the art in that as well. And so, you know, he had this whole group of people around him, like Lou Fine, just, you know, just all these people that were really good artists, and you know, and super stories, and just, and so like that's the meat of it, you know. And so when you get to the kitchen sink ones, they tend to be more of, there's a lot of ones pre-war or whatever. I guess they're pre-war. I don't really know.
How. Then there was a lot of business in the middle, and then there was a, you know, how to do comics, like he was doing his sequential art.
Those
stuff
were good. Those were
good, but not as if you're a kid and you're watching, like, here's how you make a drop of water show you the passage of time.
Yeah.
I'm going to be over here where the Hulk is fighting Spider-Man if you need me, because I'm 9.
But what was, well, I wasn't reading them at that age. I was much older. But what was interesting about the Eisner ones, the later ones, is they would have interviews with Eisner with other artists. And they would talk about materials and stuff like that. So when you're a kid, this is, you know, pre-internet. And so you're trying to figure out, like, how do people draw comics? Like, what do they do? Like, what do you use? Like, when I was a kid, I found a book by this guy, and I had a little interview with him in the book. And he said, oh, I use a rapidograph pen to draw. And so I thought, well, that's what you use. So I went and I got a Staedtler rapidograph pen. And that's what I started drawing with. Now, the problem with those pens is they have no width of line. They have no variation of line. Yeah. You just have this constantly the same line all the time.
Do you remember who said that he drew with a rapidograph?
I don't remember. It was like a children's book or something. He wasn't even a comic artist. But I liked his drawing. So I thought, well, I like what he does, so I'll do it too. And actually, Crumb used a rapidograph pen in his sketchbooks. So it wasn't unheard of, but it's not the most pleasant drawing tool. Yeah. And then, you know, I was reading. So then when I discovered these Eisner books, they have these long interviews with artists, you know, whether Joe Kubert or whoever, like from that time period. And you're like, wow, this is, you know, they're giving away the secrets here. This is awesome. Like, so they use brush. What kind of ink did they use? You know, they talk about like
Winsor-Newton
brushes. Yeah, that was always coming up. And so, of course, but they don't tell you specifically what kind. They just talk about Winsor-Newton. So when I was a kid, I went to the store. Went to Benson's Graphics right on Richard Street next door to Seafox, and I would buy brushes there. But no one told you that the Series 7, the really nice brushes, are in a box behind the counter.
Yeah.
And so I would just buy like the red handle ones, which were fine. Like they were like a mix of you know, partially sable, partially artificial hair or whatever, faux sable. But they were fine. You know, I learned on those. So now actually I can't use Series 7 brushes. Like, they're just way too floppy for me. I cannot make them work. Like, I've tried many a time. I'm always like, I'm not just going to start and give up. I'm going to do a whole page. And I get partway through, I'm just like, ugh, I hate this. I hate how it looks. It's terrible. So I go back to I have these Robert Simmons brushes that I use. And they have a nice thick shaft, which I like. But also, they're just almost kind of a plodding brush. Like, that doesn't sound very nice to describe them as, but they just do a line, and when I need to get thick, I just press down and it gets thicker, and it's very easily to control.
That's how you come up with your style, is mess up somehow and get the wrong thing.
Exactly.
Go to the store, ask for the number 5, and you get the number 7, and all of a sudden that guy's got a unique take on things.
I guess so. Actually, the Simmons were recommended to me by this guy who ran an art store in Langley called the Art Attic. It was part of the Hobby Hut.
And it was the top floor?
It was on the top floor, the art attic,
It would be a mistake if it was the basement.
That's true. That would have been the wrong name.
And he went, like, I'm an artist, man. Yeah. I'll make an attic out of whatever I want.
And so I was talking to this guy, and he was an interesting character because he used to bring brushes and pens up to Norris, who's a classic Vancouver artist. He used to do newspaper, almost like on the editorial page, although they weren't necessarily editorial cartoons.
No, they're just cartoons.
They're kind of slice of life cartoons of that era of British Columbia.
But really beautiful work, and you should look it up.
Oh, just awesome. And his draftsmanship was just great.
Yeah, they'd have his work on display quite often on Granville Island at various little art galleries. And it was always nice seeing the original work.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to see, yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, his work is not done any service because they were like republished in these horrible little kind of pamphlet books with yellow, you know, the yellow covered ones.
Yeah.
And I know I've collected a ton of them, but they're just so ugly, and you can't, you know, when you put them on your shelf, there is this kind of a mess of yellow floppy covers with nothing written on them, like on the spine. So you don't know which book is which, and come on guys, do Norris proud and republish them better. But, it was always interesting to talk to him about that. He'd say, you know, he'd take all these pens up there and he would try the pen and he'd be like, nope, try another one. Nope. Try another one. Nope. Oh, this one's good. Take that one. Try brushes. No, don't like it. Try. Nope. Yep. Okay. This one's good. You know, so because some people can afford to be picky.
Yep.
I just go buy a brush and go home with it. You know, good enough. What if a hair is sticking out off to the side? I just cut it with some scissors, right? That's all I do.
Yeah. Actually, that's not the worst thing in the world.
No. Whatever works.
No, that's I think actually is a little bit of a problem sometimes when you're a young artist or any kind of artist, and you think like you read up on like this is how you do things, and then you get locked into I have to do it that way. Well, that is the way to do it. These are the only tools. I've got to use Bristol board to draw on.
Yeah.
I've got to use this size and texture Bristol board.
Yeah.
I must use this type of pencil to draw. I must use this eraser.
Yeah.
This is how you do it. And then you see someone like, when we used to, sometimes we'd visit like a Chester Brown and you see like how he does
his draws thing. On typewriter paper.
Yeah. He draws on typewriter paper, one panel at a time on his lap.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And you go, that's crazy. Yeah, but it works. So whatever works.
It works well because he inked with a brush, though. So a typewriter paper is actually okay with a brush. You couldn't use a pen in that situation because you'd end up with all these lines, like little roots creeping out from your pen lines.
Yeah.
Because there's way more ink that goes down with a pen than a brush.
And there is good, there's good information to be had. But, you know, if you think that this amount of secrets will show you how to do it, no.
No, you're right. And I mean, I think most... But I think most artists like to experiment, though, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they like to try. I think the hardest thing for a new artist to learn is to draw rough drawings. Like when you're a kid, when you start to draw, you just draw on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to draw a car, and you draw the car.
Usually on the back of something else, other piece of paper that was already used.
Yeah, your dad's notepaper he's not using for work anymore.
Yeah.
So you draw on the back of that, and you draw a car, and you just draw it. You know, you just draw the car, and that's how you draw cars. You know, when you're going to draw a person, you draw the head.
Yeah.
And then you draw the body on it. And that's how you always draw. And so when you grow up and you want to draw more detail, it's hard for you to break out of that thinking. And so you just start with your head and then you just kind of move down from there. You never learn to rough stuff out. Like I was thinking about this because I had to draw Goofy for that Super Goof thing, you know, the Super Goof, the Dark Knight parody cover. Yeah. And I'd never drawn Goofy before. I didn't even know how he looked really. So, you know, I printed off a couple of images from the internet and put them on my table, and then I just sat down and I just drew like the roughest thing you've ever seen. Like first thing I did was I kind of roughed out how Batman looked on the original thing. So I kind of had how I wanted him to be posed. And then I had to start drawing in Goofy. And it was just like scratch, 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 mess, you know, circle for his bum, you know, then kind of draw the legs out roughly, and then, you know, and then it didn't work quite right. So draw more roughly there and erase a little bit. And, you know, it was just this matter of erasing and drawing circles and drawing his head in. And this, everything was all rough. You know, it was just like a mess.
Yeah.
You know, but I kind of got what I wanted. And then I put another piece of paper over that. And then I drew that out. So it looked a little better. And, you know, so if I had done that when I was younger, though, it would have been terrible because I wouldn't have known. Like, I would have been locked in this idea that when you draw something, you just draw it. You know, you don't have any rough.
Yeah.
There's no throwing away of paper, you know.
The image comes perfect out of the pan.
That's right. And that's how you associate. You don't realize how much work. So when you see like Charles Schulz inking, you don't realize that he just labored over this pencil drawing for a while before he even put pen to paper. You know, you don't, that's the thing. People just don't talk about the before. They always show you the after. So I think that's a hard thing. Like, you know, tools are difficult, you know, and what, you know, even if you learn to draw and you learn to rough, but I didn't learn to do roughs until I started doing title cards, to be honest with you. Like when I drew Rounders.
Which was your comic.
Which was my comic that I did. I pretty much drew every page on the page just as it came out of my pencil. You know, I didn't do roughs. I didn't plan it out. I just would go, okay, well, the head goes here. And I would just start drawing the head and I would draw the body. The problem with doing that, though, is you get a really stiff pose because you're not, you haven't worked out what it's going to look like. So you just kind of fill in stuff until you reach the bottom of the panel and you stop. So it's really not well thought out, and it's very easy to get a kind of wooden...
Also, it was your first issue of it, and your first issue is always wooden. You look at like anyone's first issue, and it's stiff.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't loosened up. I haven't got the muscles loose in the figures yet.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was partly that. Partly just I hadn't learned to work out. Like, we were talking a little bit... Well, we've been talking about Tintin and Hergé for a while. And Hergé, when he drew incredibly rough... He would start off with like the roughest roughs you've ever seen.
Yep.
You know, Tintin looks like an egg with a little bit of hair, you know, down at the top. And then he would start to draw, and he would draw on big pieces of paper, and he would fill the margins with character studies, with little, you know, if he had someone running, he would draw them running a few times, trying to work out how that would look. you know, then he would kind of work it out in the panel, and it was all very rough. It was just, you know, and he would just draw line after line after line after line after line. And then when he kind of got what he wanted, then he would go over it again with a darker pencil, and he would pull out the lines that he wanted,
yeah,
and create the drawing. And when you see that, you go, wow, even, you know, so even he was like, he near like, you know, his, obviously his technique changed over time, and he found what worked best for him. And yeah, it was sort of in his middle period, he started using like tracing paper, and he would trace out, he would draw, you know, the roughs and stuff like that. And then he traced them on a tracing paper, and then those would be transferred onto the actual Bristol board, you know. And he had a group of people who would do that for him. So that's, of course, takes away some of the labor as well.
Yeah. Pardon this one cough.
That
done.
I'm so insulted.
I'm sorry to have done that while we're talking about Hergé.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I think one of the mistakes, like one of the things that really messed me up as a kid was
drugs.
Say no to baby aspirin. Here's something. I watched a documentary about Charles Schulz, and they showed him drawing Charlie Brown.
I know that.
And it was a perfect drawing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, well, I guess that's how it goes. Eh?
Yeah, yeah.
And and now I look at it and go like, well, there's a pencil underneath it. You didn't notice.
Yeah.
And there also used to be a guy who was on TV, and he'd be a storyteller.
Is that the guy?
Oh, are you talking Ben Wicks?
Ben Wicks, yeah.
Oh, Ben Wicks. Well, I think Ben Wicks would actually kind of freeform it.
Oh, really?
But there used to be a guy.
I don't think so. I think he had pencil lines
could
there,
be,
too.
Could be. Very well.
Mr. Dresser was the same.
Yeah. And there was another guy who would tell you a story and would do these elaborate, wonderful drawings.
Yeah.
And only now do I realize, of course, he had pencils underneath there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
But you just thought, well, artists that are good can just have this stuff come out fully formed.
Sure.
They understand all the perspective in their head. Mm-hmm. And if you can't do it, then you should just give it up, buddy, because it's talent, right?
Yeah.
Either you got it. Or you don't.
Well, yeah. Clearly, well, we've had that argument about talent.
Yeah, that's right. But you know, I guess you don't. But you don't put the practice or the, you know, the roughing. Yeah. When someone builds a building, no one comes up with what it is. The workers go out there with a bunch of bricks and they just start at it. And when you
come
feel,
on, guys.
I think this is enough floors. We're done. All right.
Put a roof on it.
Yeah. Well done. Put a roof on it. We're done, boys. All right. Well done, everybody. Yeah. I think there's a big mistake to that.
Yeah, yeah. No. It's true.
I wish there was more things that would show you process.
Mm-hmm.
Like I like your process.
Like process posts?
Yeah, I like those things. But same thing with music, you know, mm-hmm. like, and it's very tough because you never know as a musician when you're starting to write a song. So how the heck would you know? You just come up, when did you come up with this tune? I just was in the shower or doing something mm-hmm. else or making breakfast. And well, oh, yeah. And then you put it, you lay it down. It's like, okay, that's something, but it's not everything. And then you slowly build it, slowly build it, slowly build it. And it would be nice to see the slow building of things.
Yeah, it depends.
And what you throw out, what you keep, and what you throw out, and what you keep. And there's this enormous pile to the sides, if you could see it artistically, of all the stuff you throw out in the making of this one thing that looks like you just created it perfectly formed.
Yeah. Well, I know talking to a former friend of the show, David M., that, you know, it pops into his head words shortly followed by the music. Like it kind of comes together, but it just comes into his head.
Yeah.
And he'll work on it. He doesn't even touch his guitar until he's got the song fully worked out in his head. Then he'll sit down and start working out the chords and stuff like that.
Does he hum it or something into a recording device or anything?
He
just is able to keep it completely in his head.
It just stays in his head.
That's my trick. Like I used to, and I haven't written a lot of songs, but the songs I have written, I did so long ago that, you know, I would call up my answering machine and I'd sing something stupid into it just to get the rhythm of the thing that I'm saying because I'll forget it very soon.
This is when you're writing songs for Up With People.
Yeah.
I can tell.
Yeah.
I remember that. Those were the good old days. You had rolling in the money.
Oh, boy.
Rolling in the Up With People
money.
Well,
you have to because you got to pay them to actually do the show. You got to pay them $5,000 to be in their show.
Oh.
That's a completely different story.
That's where that money went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I used to also do that before I smartened up with a lot of my writing, too. And, you know, I'd just, like, call up myself and with a joke and just, like, remember this. Okay.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, have a bunch of, I got a whole bunch of messages all from
me. So every time you phone, you'd have to listen to your funny message?
Beep, bop, boom. Yeah.
You're like, oh, why did I do this?
That's right. I'm rapping Dave, and I'm here to say I hope you leave me a big message today because it's the time when we leave these kind of messages on the outgoing messages. Well, break it down.
Break it down. How many messages is that?
Don't be a creep. Leave it at the beep. It's a peep. Weep, weep, weep. Oh, my God. What did we... It was a new technology. We didn't know. Guys, we didn't have access to pornography then. We had to get the energy out some way, and that was creative answering machine messages.
That's right.
Well, I'm rapping Jim Rockford. Leave a message.
I was talking to David, though, about songwriting, because I love music.
Yeah.
But I'm a very unmusical person. Like, I cannot figure out.
You play guitar?
I play guitar, but I don't know how to make it work.
What do you mean?
Like, I don't know how to make it work into a song. Like if someone said, hey, let's play together, I'd be like, I don't know. What do you do? Like, what?
And then
know.
They'd say, play a G chord. Play a G chord. Play a G chord.
But I don't understand that, right?
Well, like, what do you mean? You know how to play a G chord.
I don't know what keys mean. Like, I just don't understand all that stuff.
Well,
like,
what do you mean?
It's out of my field of.
Wait, no, you play guitar. I've seen you play guitar.
Yeah.
So what happens when you play guitar? You don't know what a chord is?
Oh, well, I know what the chords are. I just don't understand
do
how it becomes
know?
A song. I just don't understand that.
What do you mean? I never
been able to figure it out.
Yes, you do.
No, it's
yes,
true.
Yes, you do.
I cannot.
You know how a song is made.
I don't know. I don't understand it. Like, I can't. Like,
they feel like the Beatles. It's three chord songs. They went brung, brung, brung. Got it. Repeat. Round, da, 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 and there you go.
Yeah, I can't make it work. I don't know how to make it.
Okay,
I don't know how it fits
that's
together.
A mental block. That's not.
I don't know how it fits together. And, like, if you're playing with someone,
it's
you're like...
It's not magic.
But if you're playing with someone,
ask
you're like...
David.
I'm going to play like a... I'm going to play something that's slightly different than what you're playing.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of harmonize with... I wouldn't... Okay. I just can't do that. I just don't understand
sure
how it
works. Sure you can. You just can't
weird.
Do it. Sure you can. You just can't do it well.
But I was saying...
You
yeah,
can do
that's
it
true
a
enough.
Shitty job. It's
that's
like someone
true.
Going, I can't
right.
draw a dog. The fuck you can't. You
he
can
said
just
it.
Can't draw a dog well.
He said
like,
it.
Draw it again. Now draw it again. Now draw it again. Now you're drawing it better the sixth time than the first time.
But talking about songwriting, too, one time I said, it just amazes me, like the idea that a song pops into your head. You know, and almost fully formed, and you just kind of work it out and make mm-hmm. it work. And he goes, yeah, but it's equally amazing to me that a picture pops into your head,
yeah.
and then you just make it work. So to me, they're both, you know, he said, what's surprising to you is, you know, or is astounding to you is equally astounding to me.
Right. I mean, there's
you know,
a
different skills.
There's a comedian that I know who I really admire, and yeah, he was saying that about drawing once. And he was just like, oh, just imagine the idea of like being able to think of something and you could draw it. It's just fantastic. And since this time, they've actually taken up painting and are quite good at it.
Okay.
And it's like, yeah, so that's how you do it. It's yeah. not. It's not magic.
No,
you
it's can, not.
You know, it depends.
Unless you're untalented.
No, it's not. If you're untalented. It's the
if you're untalented, don't even bother.
No. And I don't want to overquote that guy from This American Life. Who's the guy? Because the letter A, his name.
Avi Glass,
that's his name. Whatever. Ira Glass. You're right. Sorry about that. But his thing about how your taste for something is always sharper than your talent as you're going, and that'll drive you nuts.
Because yeah.
you know how things should be.
Sure.
And then you're like, I know how C chords should sound. Should sound like rung. All right, now let me just play it. Rung. Okay, well, I'm shitty and I'm never going to do this again because I'm clearly garbage.
Yeah.
No, I mean, your taste is always going to be ahead of the road of what you can do. And so it'll drive you nuts. And so you've got to like, shut up. That part of you that has good taste,
yeah.
you know, until you catch up a little bit. And even then, you'll know what you're trying to do is never what you're doing, and that'll frustrate the hell out of you.
Yeah.
But that's with anything.
True
I mean,
true
you
down.
Know, however you imagine this podcast is going to be before we start talking is probably differently than how it turns out. But then at the end of it, you listen to it and go, that's fine. And then you move on. That's the lovely thing. Like, this podcast is actually a trick to get you to perform because you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Because you got to keep talking. And then at the end of it, you're not going to do it again. So fuck it. You've got to put it up. Damn it. You have no choice. Oh, I got to do another one next week. Ah, well, screw it. And
yeah.
so there you go. It's all trickery.
I guess.
Trickery, my friend.
Well, that's what most creation is, I think, is trickery. I think most
yeah.
most artists spend a lot of time tricking themselves.
Give yourself, make yourself not have a choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a thing in this, once again, this Museum of Vancouver piece. Damn, I wish I remembered the person's name, Stefan something. But he did a study about happiness and what have you. And,
mm-hmm.
and one of the things that he said is that to achieve happiness is to try to complete goals that you have. When you complete goals that you have, you know, no matter how you do at them, you will feel better. And to do that, you have to seek discomfort. Because you're never going to be comfortable. The way I'm interpreting this, and I believe seek discomfort is like a real motto for me. Like I'm doing a show on Saturday where I'm not comfortable at all doing this at all, but I know I'll be fine at
is
the end of it.
You're performing as a fakir with your bed of nails?
That's right.
Okay.
No, I'm doing a parody song of a Cat Stevens song, which I don't feel 100% like on board with, but
yeah.
I want to do it,
sure.
you know, and as an artist, you seek discomfort, get out of your comfort zone, try something that's difficult. And you will, but you know, feel a sense of satisfaction at the end of
this
it.
This is the show where you're going to do all the songs from T for the Tillerman in various
yes.
parody. Yes,
I'm going to do it as Mr. T.
Mr. T.
Yeah, I'm doing Mr. T for the Tillerman.
I pity the fool.
I pity the fool, pitting and now the fool. Here comes the A-team now. Here comes the A-team. Here comes Faceman. First of all, he's going to seduce the lady. Then Mad Murdoch's coming. He's acting all crazy. Well, okay, anyway, and so on.
That
so
was far. Good.
Thanks.
Wow, it's too bad you stopped.
No, I don't think it was too bad.
You had a moment
there. Stopped.
You had a moment.
No. I couldn't really remember. Hannibal, that's the name of the other guy.
Hannibal sorry. Lecter, you're right.
Yeah, Hannibal Lecter comes and then eats everybody.
the famous A-team character, yeah, Hannibal Lecter.
That is exactly it. But no,
and
I,
Mr. Teeth.
That is something that I really
Dr.
do.
Dr. Teeth.
Agree. Like, I don't feel 100% comfortable. Like, at the convention, I don't feel comfortable talking to people for 2 days straight, sitting there for a bunch of hours.
I do.
Yeah, that's weird, eh? Like, that's completely up your
alley. I was exhausted after it, but I do enjoy it.
Yeah, I don't. I don't feel good.
I know.
People I know. Come up to me, and they're super nice, and it's great, and I'm happy to talk to them at the time.
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, like, I'm not sad about it. I'm actually happy with how things went. It's sure. a pleasant memory.
Yeah.
And I'll be first in line next year to do it. But I'm not comfortable during it mm-hmm. at all.
Sure.
Yeah. It's awkward. People are talking to me. My back against the wall. I can't get away. What the shit? And then a whole bunch of people that I know from, you know, that I'd never see otherwise.
Yeah.
Now I got to make small talk with them and catch up. Oh, boy, it's hard.
I enjoy all that.
I'm at a panel. Oh, what's going on? Am I talking too much? There's four of us. Has everyone talked enough? Oh, crap. Well, I've got something I want to say. Is it polite to interrupt right now? It seems like he's moving on to the next subject. Damn it. I've got something I really want to say. Should I say it now? Damn it. I hate this. I just hate this.
Huh.
It's so frustrating.
See, well, you had it a little worse
Seek
than me.
Seek discomfort.
Because I was there all day, you know, yakking it up.
Yeah.
But then I could go home and work on the title card by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And just be by myself for, you know,
four or five hours. Yes, I was
you had a guest,
friend, yeah.
You had a friend who was visiting, and so you had to go back and
yeah.
and continue socializing. So you didn't have recharge time, you know.
That's true.
And so that's harder for you than,
yeah.
you know, whereas I have, you know.
It was also getting up in the morning for it, too. So, I mean, the first couple of hours are a blur, you know, where I'm just, what do we got, booga, booga. Yeah. I could go to get something to eat, but everything is eggs and pancakes out here in this crazy world.
Yeah.
It's going to be a while till the Japanese hot dog vendor will show up and have food that I will enjoy.
I never had any of that this year.
Oh, so tasty.
My hot dog I got from Orange Julius.
Wow, Mr. Bragger.
I know. My $1.80 hot dog. You yep. know it's going to be good when
That's
you pay
$2
right. for
Everyone's
it.
Everyone's a winner, baby. Wiener.
Everyone's a wiener, indeed.
That's the truth. Well, they yeah. steam the buns, which is nice.
That's nice. It's true.
Yeah.
And I had cheese on it, so, you know, I went nice. The extra. So it was actually a little bit more
steamed
than $1.80.
Steamed cheese.
Steamed cheese. Yeah. Nothing like that. Especially when you, well, forget it.
No, you can't forget it.
Yeah, no, you can't. You can't forget it in
Dave,
your gut the rest of the day.
Seek discomfort. What were you going to say?
Seek discomfort. I was just going to say just that, just the discomfort of sitting with a hot dog.
Right.
Distending your stomach.
And you would bring various daughters along. You'd bring a Millis. You'd bring a Phyllis.
I brought
Sometimes
Millis
you'd bring a
Phyllis.
Millis and trade her for a Phyllis halfway through.
Yes, that's what I did.
Yeah.
Well, Millis got sick, so I had to drive her home.
Well, all those cheesy hot dogs.
That was a problem. And she didn't even eat hot dogs. I don't even know if she ate. Maybe that's why she was sick.
Could be.
Well, she's been working a really physical job for the last little while. And I think that her body basically kind of shut down. Like she got home.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, oh, we're not moving boats. We're not,
yeah.
you know, canoeing kids around. We're not chasing after people. We're not, you know, cleaning stuff. We're just sitting there. So now I'm just going to shut down.
Yeah.
And so that's what it did. So.
Well, that's sometimes what happens to me is after a lot of work. When your body goes like, oh, we're relaxing now. Well, now's a good time to get sick.
Yeah.
How about that? How about you seem to have enough time to throw up. Let me just get on that for a second and mess your stomach up. Here we go.
Maybe it's a message that your body is giving you that, you know, that you should be resting.
Yeah.
Quit running around.
Yeah. Don't be at a Comic-Con. What are you thinking?
Yeah.
With all this kind of business.
This is insane. The one thing that I learned this year that I learned last year, but I didn't put into practice this year was that I think VanCalf, to have like a really good VanCalf, you need to have a comic to peddle.
Mm-hmm.
Like you need to have some sort of material to sell.
Sure.
And I didn't. So I think that's next year.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say this aloud.
Okay.
So people can hear me. Next year, I will have a comic, at least one comic to sell.
All right. There we go.
Next year.
All right.
At least.
All right.
It was kind of funny. I don't know if you...
Seek discomfort.
Nina Matsumoto, who she won our one topic. I believe that's what she won. Yeah, she won our one topic contest a little while back.
Right. She also did an amazing drawing for our 100th show.
Yeah.
That was a Mad Magazine style fold-in.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to see what she does for our 200th show.
Yeah.
How will she top that?
I'm
assuming she'll start working on it now.
She better.
I'm assuming
better.
A hologram, perhaps? Something
maybe.
Like that. Some, I mean, at least a sculpture.
Well, sure, yeah.
Or maybe, sure. you know, some live models involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
I'm accepting
something
big.
Pressure's on her. I'm glad I'm not
her. I'm thinking, seek discomfort.
Seek discomfort.
Seek discomfort, Nina. So one of the prizes that we'd promised was a copy of my an antiquated comic Rounders.
Right.
Published, I don't know when it was published. But anyway.
I have one on my kitchen table that's cat scratched.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cat scratch fever. And then, but I couldn't find any. I thought I didn't have any left of mine.
Okay. Well, but I've found, got one of you.
I found three of them.
Oh, okay.
Just while I was organizing my comics after my flood, I decided I should organize my comics and get them up off the floor. So I was doing that, and I found three of them. So I thought I'd give one to her.
Okay.
So I brought it to VanCalf for her.
Yeah.
And then she had it sitting on her table to bring home, and someone wanted to buy it. And so she's like, "Oh no, it's a friend gave it to me. It's, you know, it's not for sale." It's like, "No, no, how much is it?" She said, "No, no, it's not for sale." So he left very disappointed.
Yeah.
He couldn't buy it. So I thought, maybe I should have brought some copies of this comic I did 30 years ago. I don't know.
Wasn't 30 years ago. If you're up for reprinting your old thing, I'll reprint some of my old stuff.
Yeah. Well, I thought you were going to.
I was going to. Then I went, the table's too full.
No.
Yeah, it would have been actually. No. It would have been. Yeah, no. I think it would have been.
Been fine.
Okay. Yeah. No, no, I'll do that. But I also, I've got a new comic that I'm working on that you can see that there's on
the
wall.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, all right. If you're going to do a comic, I'll do a comic.
All right. Sneaky Dylan challenge.
Sneaky da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And strokes for everybody.
Sneaky dragon
Strokey challenge. Dragon.
Sneaky dragon challenge.
All right. Sounds good.
We're going to have a comic. I'm going to do two comics.
Yeah. By the way, we have done a comic since this time. We did the Adam and Steve one.
We did do the Adam and Steve one. That's true. That's true.
Which is available on Facebook?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe?
Maybe.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing. Would you be comfortable putting that on our Sneaky Dragon page?
I should put it on the Sneaky Dragon website.
Yeah, there you are.
I should do that.
Done.
I'll do that.
Yeah, when you're talking about, like, I don't do comics. Yeah, except for the comics you do.
I don't do them very often.
No, okay. Well, we'll give you that.
But once Totally Tintin is done, I'm gonna start.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's too busy right now for Totally Tintin and Sneaky Dragon to take up a lot of time.
Well, we reach our halfway mark next week with that.
That's true. We do.
Yeah. We cross the equator. We're both going to get a tattoo.
Yeah?
I forget what
I'm
going to
dress up like. One of us is dressed like a woman.
Okay.
And the other one has to dress up like Neptune.
Yeah.
And there's some sort of thing that happens and I don't want to think about it.
Okay.
Sailors. Sailors, man. There's a lot of grog involved in these traditions.
I was reading up again with Lucy's comic about the different tattoos you get when different things happen.
Oh, okay.
And I forget what it was when you cross the equator, if you get like a rope tattoo or something such.
Okay, sure.
Anyway.
Makes sense.
But you used to be a sailor, so you'd know.
We never crossed the equator.
Okay.
We crossed the equator, but it was a euphemism.
We never crossed the euphemism, Ian.
When you cross that equator, you got a different sort of tattoo.
Did you ever think of getting a tattoo? Speaking of which, Nina Matsumoto has a great new tattoo.
She does. It's very elaborate.
It's very elaborate.
When you look at it, you're like, that is a lot of work someone did
my guest,
on your leg.
Who was here last week at VanCalf with us, Shane McCarthy, also former guest of the show.
Yeah.
Also very well tattooed man.
Yes, very tattooed.
Has tattoo ink that was designed by former guest of the show and a current wife of me, Pia Guerra, as well.
Oh, okay.
Did you ever think of getting a tattoo?
I did when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
I did. But I'm so freckled that all I ever wanted to do was a connect the dots puzzle on my arm.
Okay.
So I thought, no, that's okay. But I wanted to, you know, Aubrey Beardsley?
What is that? Who was that?
He was a kind of, he was Victorian, but late Victorian, kind of from the sort of age of the decadent end of the Victorian or the end of the 19th, or what is it, 19th century? Is that the 19th century, everybody? Yeah, 19th century,
right.
Yeah. And he did a lot of, like, pen and ink drawings of kind of, like thorn, like, very stylized, like, thorns and maidens. And
yeah.
If I showed it to you, you'd be like, oh, that, I know who you mean. I really liked his style, and I often thought of doing one. And then, do you remember Mary Fleener?
Yes.
She did this image, it was kind of like her as Madonna, as a Madonna.
Yes.
And it's very stylized.
Yeah, I like Mary Fleener's work quite a bit.
I love that so much. I always thought that would make a great tattoo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Neat.
But
gave me instructions on how to body surf once. Not at the beach. Like, we were actually talking at a convention, and
okay.
Yeah, she was breaking it
seems
all down.
Seems less useful in that situation. Like, it's hard to take that away with you.
Well, she's a huge surfer.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I was like, I can't surf. When you can body
surf.
If you've
read her comics, you'll know that she's...
I have read her comics.
I know. I'm just saying.
The company I work for, Bongo Comics, briefly had a line of comics called Zongo Comics.
Okay.
And hers was one of those.
Ah, nice. Yeah, she's super talented. Just love her art. She does a really very simple, very very clear line kind of style.
Mm-hmm.
Almost looks like she...
When
know she,
you say it's simple, though, it's very...
Yeah, I shouldn't say simple, because she'll often use like modern art elements to it,
yeah.
Like to express surprise or anger or whatever. And that's very interesting. But when I say it's simple, I shouldn't say that. I just mean it's very clean, like a very clean line. She really doesn't use a lot of shading, doesn't use a lot of, there's no cross-hatching. It's just very clear. And when I say simple, I just mean in terms of cleanliness. Like this is very...
I think one of the things about Van Kaff that's always a thrill is to realize that I know so many talented people that can do so much amazing stuff.
And they're all better than us.
Oh, sure. Why not? And they're clearly better than you. And I'm looking at all their stuff and like, I know all these people.
Yeah.
That's neat. And then there's so many people that I meet every time. They go like, I don't know you, but now I do know you. Oh, man. That's cool too. And just seeing what people can do.
Yeah.
You know, who aren't doing it, you know, to please someone else. They're mostly just doing it because this is the stuff that they love.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of it looks like, well, who's buying this? And then there's people buying that. It's great. Yeah.
Well, it's nice. And, you know, talking to Lucy Bellwood after Van Kaff was over. And, you know, she's saying that she was, you know, kind of done with the season, she hoped. And she said, I might go to New York. I might be invited as a guest. You're like, it's really cool. Like, you know, you do mini comics.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be a guest at a con, that's pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
How this is working out.
Well, you look at someone like, again, we brought her up before, but Kate Beaton, who's a Canadian artist who's, you know, did web comics about, you know, Canadian politics. And just like she would take covers of old books and then do jokes about those.
Yeah.
Like completely unmarketable things and incredibly popular. And yeah, tours all around. And when I say tours... not on her own dime, you know, people fly her places. I mean, that's one of the really sweet elements of what we do sometimes is, you know, people will fly you places. It's a great way to like travel and see the world and, you know, meet other artists. It's great.
Yeah.
It's a real kick. Yeah. So it's nice, especially though, when they come to us, because then I don't have to travel and I don't have to exchange money and I can bring books and I don't have to put it on a plane. Oh, it's so sweet. Yeah.
I wouldn't mind traveling, but you've done it more than me, so you've worn out your
I've
welcome.
I've worn out the welcome for both of us, for just Canadian gentlemen completely, from Delta. Yeah, they're like, oh, we've had enough of that type.
Too much.
Fair enough.
We already have one.
I think you're going to be, I don't want to be a fortune cookie. Because, oh, by the way, I was going to say there's going to be travel in the future. That's where I was going with that.
Okay.
There was some people, I was eating, not eating, I was having coffee today, and I was at a cafe, and there were some people from United Church behind me.
Okay.
And they were talking about fortune cookies.
Okay.
And they were like, and we're going to have these fortune cookies, and someone went, ahem. Oh, blessing cookies. I'm like, all right, so you're going to get the blessing cookies.
Nice.
So I wanted to pass that along to you, if you guys are all like thinking, yeah.
I always like to joke the United Church is just one step away from being a Wiccan community. So.
All right. Well, we can go have coffee at that same place, and you can tell that joke to those nice people.
They'll like it.
Yep.
They'll like it.
And then you'll go like...
Actually, where Mary is working now was a United Church camp. So it was like a summer camp for United Church kids.
Okay.
But because that sort of thing has died the death, there still is an Anglican camp down the street from them or down the path from them.
Right.
Called Camp Artaban. But this camp, Camp Furcombe, is now just for... general use, like anyone can rent, you know, weddings or, you know, leadership things. Or I think Emily Carr, some kind of alumni group was there recently doing something.
I'm fine with that. I'm just saying, like, listen, I'm just passing the idea of blessing cookies
onto
your church.
I like it.
All right. So just you take that with you. And you know what? You want to claim that's your idea? No one listens to this podcast? It's fine.
Are you saying that no one listens to the podcast?
I'm
no
just
one...
saying as long as no one from your church listens to you on this podcast.
I think
podcast,
we're safe with that.
Yeah, isn't that weird? No one listens?
That's fine.
Wouldn't you? If a guy was next to you in church and he said, hey, I've got a radio show, would you ever listen to it? Yeah, you would. You would listen to it at least once just to go, I wonder what this guy's radio show is like.
Yeah.
But it won't happen.
No.
Same thing with every member of my family at all. Every member of my family. If my sister said, I've got a radio show, I've got a... anything.
Yeah.
If she went, I've got a blog online, I'd go, oh, I'll go check that out. Yeah. It would never happen. Never happen.
That's weird, isn't it?
No way.
It's physically
impossible to think that it would ever, ever, ever. And I don't mean this in a mean way. It just seems like it would be repulsive. Okay. I think it's almost like this. It's like if your dad said to you,
yep.
Dave,
mm-hmm.
Maybe this is not a good way to go.
Okay, go, keep going.
Dave, I've started work as a male stripper.
Okay.
And I'm going to be working down the block.
Okay.
You can come by and say hi to your old man anytime.
Show me pictures. That would be all I'd say.
Would you say show me pictures?
I don't want to be there. I don't
even think I'd want to see pictures. That's what I feel it is. Like, they don't want to look at, and it's the same way as
I don't
want
to be there for that.
Yeah.
Well, I will say that my brother listens to the show.
Oh my gosh.
So, and he's told me that he finds it interesting, but he thinks that I'm too guarded.
Okay.
So I thought that was interesting.
Well, why don't you reveal a secret about your brother then right now?
No. No.
He really loves hats.
He does. He sure does. Loves them. I don't even know if he likes hats.
One time, he put the wrong shoes on his feet. There we go. All the dirty laundry is coming out now.
I was the one who did that, so yeah. I can't even accuse him of that.
Someone enjoys playing with dogs. Now we've told you.
Euphemism.
The secret's out.
It's a euphemism.
That's right.
I have nothing. I do have a good story about him. I'll tell you this story really quickly.
All right.
He was at home one night, and he heard something at the door, and the door was like, he heard like a noise at the door, and he wasn't sure what it was.
Was there a knock at the door?
It wasn't a knock. It was just like was not a knock. No, right. You don't have to imitate it, because I know what you meant by knock. I know that you meant, yeah, that's exactly, I knew you meant that, and I said no. So even you demonstrating the sound, still no. So
there's this noise. Ding dong.
There was not a doorbell. There's not a doorbell.
Hey, Dave, I'm outside. Let me in.
Why is this person calling my brother Dave?
Dave,
I mixed up.
I don't know what brother it is.
I'm not telling you.
All right, I'm going to wait till your story's done.
So he heard
this
noise.
Tell Dave I was here.
He heard this noise, and he went and he looked outside, and he could see that there was a bear at his door.
Oh my gosh.
And what the bear was doing is it was rubbing his back on the door. Mm-hmm. And so he went downstairs, and the whole door was swelling into the house. It was like the haunting. Oh. Because this bear was pushing against it. And so he's just like, oh, man, I hope this deadbolt holds. Oh, I hope it holds. And yeah, he just scratched his back on this door for a while, and then he left. Fortunately, he did not break the door. Because normally, like, bears like to come through the neighborhood because he lives in an area that they decided to build where bears live.
Yeah.
And they'll just knock over fences. Like, they don't stop. They don't go around them. They just go through them.
Sure, they're a bear.
They're a bear. I can do that. I'm a bear. And they're...
Diplomatic bear immunity.
They're kind of a funny, they're kind of a funny thing. They put bear traps around to get some but the bear traps caught none of them. Nope. Not a single bear was caught. Nope. They still came through.
Yeah.
But they just didn't bother with the traps.
Yeah.
They're too smart for that. But then my brother was also telling me one day, because I felt so dumb, because you know what to throw out and what not to throw out. Like, you know, you have bears.
Yeah.
He says, so one time I threw away a bunch of spaghetti. I don't know what I was thinking of.
Right. Get an Italian bear.
And so I was walking around, he has a camper, and he says, I was walking around this camper and I heard this noise. And I knew right away it was a bear eating.
Yeah.
And so I looked, and there's this bear standing there, and he had all the spaghetti hanging out of his mouth, like all the noodles hanging down, chewing away. So I said, what did you do? He says, I went in the house. I don't blame you.
Wow.
Don't blame you at all.
Here was the scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
So then he went in the house, and then later that night, and then he went to the door, and the bear went, you got any Parmesan?
Oh.
And that's the story of the bear.
That is a good, very, very good story.
Well, thanks so much for listening to our show.
Does the deja vu in the woods?
Oh, that's not bad.
Thank you.
You told that joke before, though.
No, I have not.
Huh?
Did I say that joke before?
No, that's a point of deja vu. It's fucking what deja vu is. God damn it. Hey, Dave. Common sense. All right. So anyway, thank you so much for listening. As we've mentioned many times, we have another podcast right now called Totally Tintin. If you want to listen to that, it's about us going through all the Tintin books. We did
one
a while ago called Completely Beatles, where we did that with all the Beatles albums. All of those are where regular podcasts can be downloaded, or our Sinky Dragon website has them all on there as well. We love hearing from you, so if you want to write to us with your story of bears and brothers or anything at all, then go again to sneakydragon.com, and under each episode, there's our message area. Also on that page, there is a store.
Yeah.
If you want to buy a shirt... you will get free buttons with it. So find a shirt there that you like. We may have a new shirt based on last week's...
a couple new shirts.
Yeah, a kind of black swan type thing that people seem to like. So new shirts are coming. Check out the Sneaky Dragon store and see that stuff there. We are also on Facebook. We are also on Twitter at Sneaky_Dragon. We are SneakyD at SneakyDragon.com. Anything else, my friend?
No.
All right. Dave will be working on a comic as soon as we're finished with Totally Tintin. I'll have to do a similar thing. Please remember, do not throw out spaghetti unless you want
bears.
Adorable bears. Thanks for listening.
They're adorable, but big.
It's true.
Yeah.
Some are.
Some aren't.
Bears are very different sizes. There's a story called Goldilocks. I'll run it by you. I'll let you know.
Bye, everyone.
show. It's 182. So that's me, you, not you. All right, I'm not going to sing anymore because I always put it at the end of the show. And you know what? It's not cool.
It's not cool to sing?
It's not cool to, you know, record me without my permission.
Should you sign a waiver first, though? Mm-hmm. Shouldn't I get that?
Here's the waiver.
Oh, nice. It's a communion waiver. All right. What are you doing?
That's funny. Okay. A communion waiver is very funny.
Okay.
Just before you take the communion, you got to sign this waiver. That's good. Just right.